If you've read the title on the front of your order sheet, you'll know that as we look at this psalm together this morning, we're going to do so with a question in mind. And this is the question: is there any security? I wonder how you would answer that question. I suspect your answer will depend, at least in part, on your personal circumstances. I think it will depend in part on your temperament. And there might be quite specific experiences or situations in your life, either in the past or in your present, that have left you feeling anything but secure. And although in lots of ways we can recognize that we live in a relatively quiet and prosperous and peaceful corner of the world, it doesn't insulate us, it doesn't keep us unaware of what is going on in the rest of the world and all sorts of things that might qualify as a threat to security. If you watch the news, we increasingly hear stories about cybersecurity and phishing scams and questions about whether your password is secure, is your data protected and safe and backed up. And many people's lives are governed by a pressure to achieve this vague concept of financial security. And so people fill in forms and lie awake wondering whether they're adequately insured, whether their debts will be manageable, whether they'll have enough money to have heating and fuel as well as food. And then there are the bigger things that seem so hard for us to get our heads around, these questions of global security. What's North Korea done this week? How are people responding? What about the so-called Islamic State? What about rising tensions in NATO or the G8 or the Eurozone or whatever group you look at? And the bare statistics are very sobering. When I checked on Saturday, and this number may already have changed, this year in 2017, internationally there have been 751 terrorist attacks, resulting in 4,768 fatalities. And so the picture does not appear all that secure. And so we ask again, is there any security? And what does the Bible, what does a psalm like Psalm 62 have to say into any of this? Well, the psalm begins in the first two verses with quite an emphatic testimony. It's a personal testimony that leaves us with no doubt where they seem to find their security. In verse 1, we read this: "My soul finds rest in God alone. My salvation comes from Him." Sometimes rest isn't all that easy to find. When we first brought my baby son Andrew home from the hospital, in a mixture of exhaustion and naivety, we had his basket that was all sort of laid out. And we took this tiny little baby and we just kind of plonked him in this big basket and sort of flopped a blanket over him, scared that we would freeze him or overheat him or something. But there he was just rattling around. He'd been used to being held inside and warm and enclosed on all sides. And suddenly he had all this space, and he didn't know what to do with it. It was not his idea of a restful situation. He felt totally insecure and upset. And it was only as we picked him up and held him in the closeness of our arms, or later as we learned how to wrap him up carefully in a blanket, that he was able to find the peace and the rest that he needed, and then the rest that we needed. But the psalm writer's security, the rest he's talking about, it's not just about that external sense of coziness, of being bundled in. The rest that he's talking about is something that goes more than skin deep. It goes to their very soul. And so amid trying circumstances, anxious thoughts, that aching fear that gnaws away at us, the psalm writer finds silence and quiet and peace in his God. And as they think of being close to God, they have this sense of security, this sense of safety. And there's something exclusive about this safety. It is in God alone, the God who offers him salvation, a glorious rescue that will lift him from the dark situation and bring them into light. Then in verse 2, he alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will never be shaken. And the images are quite simple and the picture is compelling. God is like a rock, steady, firm, unchanging, a solid ground on which to stand amid the storms of life. A fortress, a refuge, a safe place, a place of security, even when there is conflict and struggle all around. And of course, this kind of security, especially when we think about the picture I painted at the start, is deeply attractive to us. How many of us at the moment where we feel least secure would not want to know such a God? Who of us, when hard-pressed and exhausted, would not want to know that kind of rest, the rest that reaches into our very souls? So we start off with something that is attractive. But the more problematic question, perhaps, is it true? Can we really know this kind of rest and security? Might we dare to suggest it's naive, or question whether it takes the reality of our experience and our struggle seriously? In the Sound of Music, I'm not going to burst into song, there's that scene when the Von Trapp children, one after another, flood into Fräulein Maria's room, scared of a thunderstorm. And she tells them, or sings to them, "When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad." And funnily enough, after joining in with her song, they don't feel so bad. They're distracted, and their fears of the storm outside are suddenly forgotten. But is the psalmist offering something more than this? Because I think we know deep down that sometimes we actually need more than simply distraction. When we have that experience of really feeling threatened, the feeling of complete vulnerability when you simply feel cut open and laid bare, or that sickening and even paralyzing sense of anxiety that accompanies certain situations that is just totally beyond our resources and power to control, those storms of deeply felt internal weakness or external attacks that disturb us and panic us and simply will not be calmed by nice words or comforting ideas. We want more than a song. But thankfully, I think the psalm does have more to say. Though, first of all, in the next pair of verses, we have a window into the psalmist's own personal storm. And we discover that the security they're talking about is not simply a nice idea that's been formed in the abstract. It's not merely theoretical. It's not an imagined comfort. It is something, a conviction that has been forged in the midst of real and pressing danger and threat. Because they have been under attack. Verse 3, they ask the question, "How long will you assault a man?" There is a sense in which they're at their limit, the end of their tether. They are being ganged up against. They are teetering like a wall that only needs one more nudge before it collapses. "Would all of you," they're ganged up upon, "throw him down, this leaning wall, this tottering fence?" And so they are in deep need, desperate need of security. Verse 4, they fully intend to topple him from his lofty place. They take delight in lies. With their mouths they bless, but in their hearts they curse. They have an adversary who is deliberately and forcefully trying to bring them down with violence, with lies, with curses. And so their situation is desperate. And apart from God, they are utterly insecure. And yet immediately, where does the psalm take us? They take us straight back to where we started. They go back to the conviction that in God and in God alone, they find rest, they find hope, they find salvation and real security. But there's a subtle difference from the first two verses of the psalm. What was presented in verses 1 and 2 simply as a matter of fact, my soul finds rest and so on, is now being applied to their crisis. They say to themselves, find rest in God alone. What was descriptive is now prescriptive. They're telling themselves, reminding themselves, determining in themselves that they should find rest in God. They are taking hold with both hands of the security that is found in God. They are actively trusting in God to keep them secure. Now, this shift might appear subtle, but it is important. It's one thing to know intellectually that the dentist is well-trained, fully qualified to perform the procedure in your mouth, and capable of alleviating the toothache that has pushed you to your wit's end. But it's another thing to actually sit in the chair and to entrust yourself to their care as you watch them pick up that furiously whirring drill. An active response is required. A mistake we might make is to doubt that God will actually deliver, that God will actually provide that security we crave. But the psalm writer, despite the reality of their crisis, testifies that his very honor, his very salvation can be trusted into the secure hands of God, that God is fully qualified for the task, however dark and difficult things may seem. Indeed, in verse 8, this trust that is personal is suddenly widened out, and others are invited. Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your hearts to him, for God is not simply my refuge. God is our refuge. There is room in the fortress for all who pour out their hearts to God. Another mistake, an easy mistake to make, is to imagine that our experience of vulnerability, our experience of the crisis, somehow negates the security that God offers, or disqualifies us from knowing that security for ourselves, as if God was only interested in those who have an easy life or those who make a difficult life look easy, that only people like that can truly know God's security. No, I don't think that's right. I think the rest that God offers is for those who trust him in the very midst of the storm. God is not disappointed or disinterested in us when we struggle or when we find ourselves racked by fear or anxiety. And I think we can know this with real certainty, because when we look to Jesus, Jesus who knew God the Father intimately, who trusted God utterly, and yet we see in the Gospels experienced the fullest depths of vulnerability and apprehension as he faced external threats all around and as he wrestled with inner turmoil. We see this in that painful scene in the Garden of Gethsemane, the night before, or the night when Jesus was arrested. Let me take you to the account in Mark 14. Just listen. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch." Going a little farther, he fell to the ground and prayed that if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will." What do we see in the garden? We see both the agony of the crisis, but also the commitment into the hands of God the Father. And so at once he dignifies the reality of our struggles and our troubles and our anxieties, and at once he validates the security that is found and found only in the hands of God. Trust in him at all times. Pour out your hearts to him, for God is our refuge. And then once again, the psalmist moves on, having committed to the reality of the security that is offered by God. In verses 9 and 10, he shows us that this security is without rival. I think so far the emphasis has been on the questions that someone might come to God if they were stuck in their own crisis. But what about the person who doesn't seem to be in a crisis, who has carefully organized their affairs, who has established their own security, who has placed their trust in their cleverness, in their plans, in their prosperity? They've built up a secure nest egg to look after themselves, perhaps also their children and their grandchildren, using all the means necessary. And the temptation is there. The security that God alone can offer can be put to one side. It can be perhaps shelved as a last resort or a final insurance policy. In my former working life in investment management, I worked with and for a lot of people who were working extremely hard to achieve financial security, who were carefully and diligently using all their mind and effort to carefully manage their wealth, taking account of all the conceivable risks that were out there, all the things that could happen. And while I did that, I met person after person who had plenty of securities but who was utterly insecure. The more they accumulated, the more they would fret, the more fraught they would be about the peaks and the troughs associated with the markets. Well, the psalmist is clear that whoever you are, whatever you start, whatever your circumstances, whatever you have or whatever you take, whatever you accumulate, your situation, when the crisis really hits, is going to be precarious. There's a warning that if you look for security in your own cleverness or in your own resources, you will simply deceive yourself. And there's a contrast in the imagery here. If the security that God offers is like that rock, immovable and unchanging, the best security that we can manufacture or contrive for ourselves, it is like a breath. It's momentary. It's passing. It lacks real substance or reality. And so the psalm has moved from God's security to their experience of crisis, to then taking hold again of the security God offers, to then setting aside all the rivals, all the false securities, and concludes in the last words, simply by focusing on God, on who God has revealed God's self to be, the God that we can know as we read the Bible, God's Word, and as we look to Jesus, God's Son. This is a God who is strong. If we pick under the words, literally it means power belongs to God, which means at once we know where power and strength is found and at the same time, it excludes all the other options. And a God who is loving. This is a true love, a costly love, a steadfast love, a love that knows us fully. We thought about that last week. A God who knows us fully in both crisis and comfort, a love that will bring us from where we start, whether it is indeed in despair and crisis and misery, and brings us into his near presence. And so we come back to our question, is there any security? What answer do we hear when the world clamors with cynical laughter, with violent explosions, with bitter accusations and cruel lies until our ears are ringing? Is there any security? Well, God alone offers silence. God alone offers rest. And so when we feel exhausted or empty or vulnerable or exposed, God alone is a safe place, a refuge. When everything feels insecure and uncertain, God alone is that rock, that solid ground on which to stand. And so I hope that we can pray the psalmist's words as our own. Find rest, O my soul, in God alone. My hope comes from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will not be shaken. My salvation and my honor depend on God. He is my mighty rock, my refuge. Amen.